All right. Five after.
Do we have the pledge on here?
We don't.
Do we call the meeting to order before the pledge or after?
You call the meeting.
All right. So let's get started. Five after. We only got about 55 minutes, so let's try to dive in. Herb, do you want to lead us in the pledge real quick?
Yes, sir. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, so I tried to give Natalie a list of everything that's ever been discussed as far as a possibility of something that's going to be in the report or eventually in the policy that we end up passing along to the whole body. And then Natalie went through and listened to every meeting and made sure that we have a list of every single potential policy recommendation. So we're going to kind of go right through those tonight. Anybody here? We have the DA's office, DPW, and the sheriff's office, and the comptroller's office. So anything anybody wants to jump in on, jump in, and we'll go from there. If we get to a point where we're comfortable enough and we've seen enough and we actually want to make an up or down vote and check that box and remove it from here, then we'll do that. If we need a little more information or want to push it off one more meeting to give somebody a chance or more data, then we can also do that. But hopefully we eliminate some of this. Go ahead, buddy.
I was just going to ask Natalie if she had a copy of that email that you sent.
I can print one. Absolutely. I'll go do that now.
Because I'm trying to find it on my phone. And
pass around for a minute.
You got to vote on it, though.
Okay.
First and second vote.
Approving the minutes from last meeting?
I'll move it.
I'll second approving of the minutes.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. So the first thing that we have on the possibility list is we had talked about for the most part GPS is in all the vehicles, correct? Do we know of a vehicle or there's going to be a plan for GPS to be in all the vehicles?
Well, they're in all the vehicles except for sheriffs. They have their own system. And DA.
But you have your own GPS system.
Yeah, we have all the marked cars have it, and have had it forever and ever.
And take home. What about take homes?
Not all the unmarked cars do not know.
If it's a take home, if it's an unmarked or something that's used in an investigative way or an undercover way, this committee decided from the get go. The resolution was even written. We're not. That's
okay.
For a different day or another day. So, like a take-home vehicle, that's just a take-home vehicle. That's not necessarily an undercover vehicle.
Right.
Do they have GPS?
So all the ones with confidential plates, as of now, do not have GPS units because even say the captain, for instance, it's a take-home. He's administrator, but he does do things that
you could potentially end up in that vehicle watching somebody.
Or they could use my vehicle.
Yes. Yeah. We do shuffle vehicles around, so any marked vehicle, any transport vehicle is equipped with a, we went over to a new AVL system recently because the old one wasn't up to par, so we started about a month ago, and we started implementing them.
They're all done now.
Yeah.
Okay, so aside from any vehicle that could potentially be used for an investigative purpose in the sheriff's department, every vehicle right now has GPS.
Yes.
And that's by choice. So we could go ahead and mandate that as part of the policy and codify that forevermore, no matter who the executive is, who the sheriff is, who the DA is, that there would be 100% of those vehicles. Does anyone have an issue with that? Is that something we'd like to vote on? And that would be a very simple part of the policy.
I think it's a great idea.
Natalie, what's the proper way of voting on a recommendation this way?
So we can do a first, we can do a first and a second, and then we'll vote, and then as long as it's, you know, in consensus, we'll do a, we'll put it in the recommendations that the actual committee is putting forward to the rest of the ledge.
Okay. Does anyone want to make a first or second that this becomes part of the eventual policy and recommendation?
Or wouldn't we just put them together and vote on the policy?
I think I don't know that we'll have consensus on every individual thing as we go down. So then okay. we'll end up having pieces that some approve and some don't. So it's first.
Yeah, I move that we put forward that policy recommendation.
Second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody against? All right, so Natalie started us off with a couple of easy ones. The next one is something that we discussed a couple of times briefly, and that's mandating that and this is something that ends up happening a lot with certain parts of the financial system, where in years past, we've come a long way, but in years past, the legislative budget analysts and the comptroller's office were not always, even though it's stated in the charter, I think, most financial data you were supposed to have access to, but we all know going back to Burt, there was a lot of access arguments. Do we think that the legislative office and the comptroller's office, which right now does have access to, is it called Samsara? Am I saying it right?
Samsara. Correct.
Does right now, you were granted access, would we like to codify in the policy that the other branches of government in the county have access to the GPS information? Nothing to do with the sheriff's department. This has more to do with the rest of the Samsara, which is used by the rest of the county. Any thoughts?
I think that's a great idea once again.
Yeah, I like the idea. I really do. But I think it should come with a request, because people can just go on there and look up stuff and then just put it on social media or whatever. I'd like to know where it comes from. So if they want to access the GPS on certain vehicles, they put a request in, and then you know who had the access, and if something shows up in the paper, you know where it came from.
And we could do it. I don't necessarily think our legislative tablets would have the access, but our staff would have access, as well as the comptroller's office would have the same access they have right now, which is basically limited to the comptroller herself and you, right?
Yes.
So it'd be very limited inside the offices. I don't know if that changes anything. Aaron, what do you think?
I mean, I think Herb's point, just in terms of the idea of having a record of who is requesting the information, I don't necessarily object to. I think it's probably good to at least have a track record of what the request was and, you know, who made it, just for transparency purposes. With that said, I think that, you know, I have no objection whatsoever to legislative members and the comptroller's office having access to this information. So, I'm supportive of it. But, you know, I think if the committee is supportive of Herb's idea of just making sure that there's a track record of the requests that were made, you know, I'm in favor of that as well.
Do we want to take the? Oh, go ahead, Herb.
Well, I was going to say to amend that, comptroller and whoever in that office, why don't we have a list of people that have general access, and then above and beyond that, it's a request.
What if we take off the legislative staff and we leave the comptroller, and then it would be a request through the comptroller, which would end up being a recordable request, but it has another branch of government oversight? Otherwise, you're literally taking somebody's word for it. Hey, was this car seen here? We've had that happen in this office, and we're taking the word of, you know, we have legislative staff telling us they saw a county vehicle on this date up here. We ask, mm-hmm. We're told no, it wasn't. It would be nice to just have another branch of government in the county have access to the GPS, and we'd still have to request it through the comptroller, mm-hmm. and only the comptroller has it right now herself.
Or we have a legislative staff member,
yeah,
responsible for that, and then if anybody else in the legislature
there's a record
wants
of the
information,
okay,
then you go to them with a request.
Yeah, my question was, who is going to keep track of this?
It would just be this access to the system itself.
Okay, so it's when you log onto the system. Or
yeah, you would have access to log into right. SAMSARA, which right now the legislature does not, no one in the legislative office has access to that.
Right.
The comptroller has recent access,
yes,
but it's not guaranteed forever.
Would training a legislative staff member...
Did it take much training?
No, I mean, it was fairly... Yeah.
Probably just a log on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Is, I mean, is that a big deal to train a member of the legislative staff to do
have
that?
Have you got on there and felt it out?
I have, yeah.
Did you get an official training?
No.
And you still feel comfortable pulling basic data?
Enough. No. Yeah, comfortable enough.
All right, so let's...
I have no problems going okay. to the comptroller's office. I have no problems with going through the legislative.
Establishing a...
Yeah.
A so let's, make a motion... to approve mandating access to GPS information to comptroller and legislative staff with a, you know, language
point
like Herbius. Yes,
yeah,
with specific know. People name, specific yeah. positions in each office named as and as the
liaison.
Yeah, with or, with yeah. the requirement of a log of any information was
right.
given to anybody.
It would be
whatever
someone who has the passcode to get in. So we'd have one person
yep.
here that would have the passcode to get in, and then requests would go through that person.
Yeah.
You know? And the comptroller would be the same thing. You have the comptroller and yourself.
Right.
And if someone else on your staff or the comptroller staff wants information, they would go to you or the comptroller.
That's right.
And then you would keep some sort of a record of who asked.
Right. I mean, we wouldn't really... share it with staff unless we were focusing on an audit of the vehicles in some way that would require that information.
Right.
So.
And you might have a staff member doing an audit.
Yeah, I mean...
So they would need that information, but they would have to come to you, or at least the request, you would give them access.
I mean, we would request another account if we were going to give someone else access to it.
Okay.
Because, yeah... we just generally don't feel comfortable sharing passwords and usernames.
But then at least we can follow the trail.
Right, right. And I mean, as the comptroller's office has records to every book and record of the county,
mm-hmm.
their charter, so, you know, if we requested it for another staff member, if we were conducting an audit, we would request it for another staff member.
Does someone want to make a motion?
The, yeah. I mean, I make a motion that, that we maintain access to the GPS information to the comptroller and legislative staff via an appointed member.
Okay. With a log of...
Yep.
Yep.
And I'll second
who
that,
got what?
That recommendation.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The next is uniform markings with the exception of the sheriff. So right now, most but not all... take-home vehicles and fleet vehicles have the emblem of the county crest on the side, which identifies it to taxpayers and anybody else as a county-owned vehicle. I thought it would be proper and reasonable to actually have an official emblem and size of what and a mandate that it would go on to each vehicle. It's something we're doing for the most part, but there has been, I mean, just recently in DPW, a supervisor did pull the stickers off because he didn't like them on his truck, and then I think he put one tiny sticker on one side. Perhaps we should have, that seems reasonable. It's in most municipal policy, especially town policies that I've looked at, have a specific size and part of the vehicle that the emblem would go on. Do we want to, maybe in the next meeting, do we want to, can we get an example or a size? I can even print it out on a piece of
like
paper and we can decide the size and mandate that in the policy. What are your thoughts, Laura?
I think, you know, they should be on there, but they should be clearly identifiable, you know, unless it's, and then we shouldn't have them on vehicles that, you know, that we don't want to identify because it's either the sheriff's department or the DSS Special Investigations. But I mean, they should be visible.
Yeah, right
should,
now most of them are. It's pretty big, most of them.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kim.
Do you want me to
give you copies of all the different ones that we have right now.
Oh, because they're not uniform. There's different. We've put.
No, because there's a map that goes on the big trucks. Hmm. Some of the pickups have that big map. Then you have some of them are in gold. Some of them are in blue.
Yeah. Let's get if you can get us.
Small ones. I have the ones that we put on all the county cars. Depending on who it is, like probation doesn't have them on their vehicles. But we do have all different sizes. I can give you all those sizes, and then you can kind of...
Please do.
Probation for security reasons.
Yes.
Okay.
So they should be exempted, too.
So there will be more exemptions as well with this.
Yeah.
And it may, out of for security reasons and perhaps for reasons of respect, you don't, you know, when you're in some kind of probation situation, you don't have to advertise it. So... We'll put a pin in this one. We'll get the examples. Thank you.
Chairman?
Kim? Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
How come we skipped ahead past the replacement schedule minimum number of miles on a vehicle?
Oh, I'm in a different order than you than you all have. I think Natalie wanted to have some success early in the meeting.
Low hanging fruit.
We start with that. If we start with that, we may not check anything off. So we're putting a... We're putting a hold on this, and what we're gonna hopefully this will be a quick one. Hopefully, once we all see and have a discussion, and whatever opinions the executive branch of government has, if let's hear your guys' thoughts as well. And the other thing would be any vehicles that should be exempted. Most sheriff's vehicles. Let's get the opinion of the DA on their vehicles and whether or not they think it's appropriate, or there could be a situation where they wouldn't want identification. But DPW and a lot of other departments inside the executive branch would have more that would probably be appropriate to be marked in the policy always. So if we could get a list, and let's make a note that we remind everybody that's here, if we don't get it proactively, for just a quick list of any vehicles that should be exempted in our policy from a mandated identification, and then the different examples that we're using now, and see if we can come up with one or two or three that for specific departments or something that we like in a certain size. Review of commuting vehicles report to include what frequency, quarter, annually. So if we're going to do an annual or a biannual review of the policy we end up coming up with that hopefully eventually gets codified, should there be a requirement that that our fleet is checked to see if it's in compliance with whatever policy we put forth and is eventually accepted?
Who would be under review?
That's what we're going to talk about. I think it's an appropriate question to ask. There is no take-home vehicles or even fleet vehicles. We borrow them on occasion if a legislator wants to go. So it's an appropriate idea to have either the legislature or the comptroller's office be the reviewer if we're going to put that into the policy. Any thoughts? Neither.
And
offices.
What about laws and rules? I mean, since they do the policies, would they oversee it? Would the county controller, review it and, send her review or her audit to them? It should go through a county committee.
Have we looked at any other how many of our policies have an annual review built in, and how is it built in? I wonder. It could also be done at any point. Anyone could request the comptroller or our budget analysts to take a look, even if it wasn't mandated as an annual review.
And
upon request, it could be reviewed at any point, so we don't necessarily have to have it. Go ahead, Chris.
Would that be the random checks, adding the random checks to a potential annual also? I think the random checks are a good idea, but I also like the idea of the annual review.
Random checks is when we discussed random checks and audits, I believe that was more of a what we discussed, that we don't, as far as we know, we don't do, we, when we talked about that, we didn't do it. Now I asked, or somebody asked, about how often do we just do a random snapshot audit and just take a group of vehicles and check them against how they were supposed to be used. Do we see any weekend movement? Do we see any, and it acts as a deterrent. But, and that would be, so that's a little different. The first one is, the first thing I just brought up was more about the policy that we come up with ourselves and it being reviewed annually to make sure it's, we're in compliance with it. The next one was about Samsara and doing a random check once in a while just to see what you find with the take-home vehicles and their use. But
and who would be doing these random checks and these reviews?
That would be done. I remember the discussion being more of an in-house procedure to go and
they have access to the data.
And to check themselves. The first one was the policy. Neither one has to be put into the policy, and both of the things we're talking about can be requested and done at any point.
I like your point about sometimes legislative staff are using the vehicles, other times it's the law enforcement or probation. Maybe it's a shared report that we work on. We all put in certain components.
Yeah, I meant that we don't really, the legislative staff has no vehicle fingerprint, and neither does the comptroller's office. The only time we would ever even use a vehicle would be if somebody's going to NYSAC and doesn't want to drive their own car. So there's not, so us over both offices, I thought, would be appropriate as oversight because they're not using the vehicles. Yeah.
But whenever anyone uses a vehicle, you have to put it in a log, right? How many miles you went, all that good stuff?
Yes, in theory, yes.
For each vehicle?
Yep. Do we want to leave these out? Do we? They're both two different things, but we're talking about them both at the same time. Go ahead, buddy.
Yes, in regards to the annual review, I mean, I think that's something that if we could put a pin in for consideration at the next meeting, you know, with the understanding, you know, Charles, is this something, you know, if we were making the request of the, you know, the controller and the office as to whether you and the office would have the ability to go through this report and, you know, to actually conduct the annual review, if the controller's office comes back saying that it would not be, you know, something that would be too much of a burden.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to define what the review is going to entail. Exactly. Do you want us to?
Yeah, and I think Natalie recalls it being in the Charlie Busick. Our policy right now that was pre-charter that's not being followed is has an annual review in there. Amanda, do you know if the new policy that you gave us the draft form of, if that had an annual review segment to it?
Which particular? If not, it should. I mean, that's just a really good procedure. And, you know, I would think some kind of commentary on that, again, in the Green Fleet report, because we already have a reporting mechanism that's annual. You know, I think that that's...
Okay, so there will be an email going out over the next couple of days as we gather information. One of the things we'll send out, along with decals and other things, will be what's in the current policy that's pre-charter, what's in the new policy that the exec put forth that we're using as a template, and then next meeting that should be a quick discussion on what we like about what's in there, and then we can also talk about if we want to tweak it or change it completely as who does the annual review. With regards to, so we're going to wait on that. That's two in a row that we have for next month. With a little bit of information, I think that we could close those out quickly. The random checks, do we want to just let it go? Well, go ahead, Amanda.
Oh, and just going back to, I don't, if folks remember the Green Fleet policy, that was a long-term collaborative kind of effort. between operations and the legislature in crafting that. And I think, you know, I think there should be some sense in terms of thinking about what is the policy elements and what are the procedure elements, and then just being working together to make sure that we're kind of denoting what is the, what's the kind of, that you have a lot of input from us as far as what the procedure elements are and kind of the cadence on an annual basis, because that is the part that's more operational. We went through a similar process with Mid-Fleet in talking about what's easy to report on, what kind of information we have at our fingertips, how is this useful, etc. So just as the kind of, as you...
We'll be very cognizant of, yeah, that we're setting a policy that you guys end up being the ones that are going to do some of what we're stating needs to be done. So we need to hear from you if it doesn't make sense or it's going to be tough for you to achieve what we want achieved. Definitely. So we'll definitely be aware of that and want to hear from you as you see or hear things that might not go the way we're saying it's going to go. So, Laura, what were you going to say?
Well, going back to your question, you know, should we do, like, specific reviews? When you do your annual audit or your report, generally an auditor pulls snippets. So they may say, well, we're going to go to DPW and we want to see March, or we want to see something specific. Is that correct?
I mean, yeah, we sample on an audit.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if we have to include...
It depends. We could conduct a comprehensive audit or review during like a specific period from January to December, or we could pick a specific week. I mean, it comes down to what do you want from the review, really. So, and I'm looking through the marked up policy. I don't see anything speaking to an annual review. There's some stuff stricken from here where the word review appears 5 times in the policy. And it was stricken one time where we say, in the old policy, it said review the need for take-home vehicle assignments in their respective departments on a semi-annual basis. Now, we cut that out. There's a comment. I mean, they're saying that the need has been established. It's not temporary.
What we've been talking about internally is that there's any, especially for, you know, it sounds like this discussion is wider, but particularly starting with that's an annual request, review, and approval. Like every single year, the employee is signing off on the expectations of how the vehicle is to be used, exactly under what purposes, and then, you know, acknowledging that this is a public vehicle, its location is kind of monitored, etc., and kind of what the repercussions are for unauthorized use of it. That happens at a yearly cadence, so that you're both reviewing what's been deployed and also reminding folks of what the appropriate use of that is every year. So we talked about that part.
Yep. So, just so you know, and anybody else who takes a look at that, it's not officially redlined. That was a draft, and some of the things that look like they're crossed out are not crossed out. The legislative side of this is reading that draft as the policy. A lot of those cross out and notations are executive recommendations.
Okay.
That maybe we don't need this, we don't need that, but that's, they just put their opinion in there, so we had it when we read it.
Got it.
It was the same thing. I think a lot of us very much like the numbers that were put forth to achieve the expectations of call-outs that would achieve having a take-home vehicle. That, I think, was maybe crossed out as well, but a lot of us like that. But read that draft as it's, that's the template, and any of those things are just suggestions from the executive side from the get-go. Did somebody else raise their hand?
Yeah, I did.
Go ahead.
I mean, in the current executive policy, I mean, it de facto, it is an annual review, because it says a take-home vehicle is a vehicle assigned to an employee who provides emergency response for a 1-year period. So they have to review it every year to up his, you know.
Renew it.
Renew it. Who reviews it? When? Who does it get reported to? How does the legislature know that it's being reviewed?
I'm just saying that.
Yeah, no, I know.
That's their policy. No, the question was, is it reviewed on an annual basis? And it has to be, because you're only given permission for 1 year. And then you have to reissue it, so I guess you have to review it, right?
In theory.
In theory.
So we'll get language from the original, from the new, and we'll have that in an email to look at and be ready for. I think the random checks and audits is something that could, it kind of takes care of itself if we are going to have access to Samsara in the comptroller's office and in the legislative office. Then those random checks can happen anytime somebody gets a complaint or a whistleblower says the vehicle's being used this way. You can look up the GPS. I don't know if we need to mandate that some of the fleet managers go ahead and go. I mean, so I'm okay moving on and crossing that one out. The random checks. Mm. We just got done putting a pin in review.
I agree.
Okay. The next one is leases. And the right now, DPW, or the executive's fleet manager, like many other people, including myself, are not crazy about leasing. That's been my experience in life, but there are people that find leasing to be a good idea for different economic reasons. And the DA's office loves leases. So do we want to have a policy do we want to put anything in this policy about leasing and what? Cause right now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Kim, but your policy is basically no. The executive branch of government basically has an internal policy right now that is no leases. So it's not an unheard of conversation to have. What does everyone think? Go ahead.
I'm sorry, so the leasing is only done by the DA's office?
Right now, for whatever reason, maybe the DA has a representative here, Mr. Weishaupt, and the DA's office does predominantly go with leases, right?
Half and half.
Half and half, okay.
Half and half. Leases for us were cost effective as opposed to trying to buy vehicles. When you buy the vehicles, our experience has been they don't get replaced. We just had one that went down. That's a 2009. And basically, the investigator was driving it rotted away. And so now that investigator doesn't have a car.
Why did it rot away?
It's 2009. Vehicles don't last, especially vehicles that are on the road all the time, don't last.
But why
I'm
was
surprised it lasted that
why
long.
Wasn't, but why didn't somebody interject? That's what I mean. I don't, why didn't?
Because the way the fleets work, there is only so many vehicles bought for the DA. Under the former policies, only so many vehicles bought for the DA. And we maintained leases for half that were paid for by forfeiture money. So the leases literally cost the county taxpayer nothing. What the county taxpayer was paying for was fuel and what limited maintenance we had on the lease, because they were out, done and out. They were low mileage leases and they were done and out within 3 years. So every 3 years they turned over, the lease was renewed. For years they were kind of, prices were stagnant. Last few years, like everything else, they started to climb a little bit. But it gave us an opportunity. Half the fleet was always ready to go anywhere. They were smaller vehicles, primarily they were small little Jeeps, which we could use to transport witnesses to do. They worked great in investigations covertly because nobody really looked at them twice. And then we had the standard vehicles, which were fleet vehicles, which were more, they were police vehicles. They were the Chevy Impalas, primarily the Chevy Impala, Dodge Charger. Now we're driving, that vehicle is down. It's old, it's like a horse that was due to be put down. It went down on its own. and we're trying to get replacements. We haven't had any vehicles this year, so we've had three leases go by the wayside. That's three cars that were not replaced because the leases were not renewed. And so we're driving this Dodge that was kind of not used an awful lot, was put on the line regularly, and we're driving a Ford Expedition, which is not the most cost-effective, that belongs to the crash reconstruction team that we bought for $500 from the town of Ulster. So
it just,
when you don't replace vehicles in a system, systematically, by policy,
yes,
things get caught in the cracks, and then that's what happens.
Which we will be, just two or three down, we have a replacement schedule that is hopefully going to be part of this policy, which would alleviate some of what you're talking about. I will say that it's a touchy situation because forfeiture money stays inside your budget and can be used for anything.
Law enforcement only.
Yeah. So, and is that something you share with the sheriff's department?
No, they have their own.
They have their own. But you kind of, you still have a budget that's overseen by the budget office and approved by the legislature, and it just seems like there's a lot of monetary decisions being made that should probably have the executive and the legislature in on these decisions, and it's hard to justify.
Well, they are in the budget. They're budgeted.
Yes, but it sounds like you, internally, you're making a lot of these decisions.
Oh, yeah, we've been leasing cars for 12 years.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but these are monetary decisions, and you could, I mean, if you use the argument, we have forfeiture money, then anything we ever question in your budget, you could say, well, that's forfeiture money. So, I mean, you know, ultimately, we make up the rest. It's a conversation for the future. It just seems like there was a lot of decisions in there and not a lot of communication with the budget office or the fund appropriators.
Yeah, I don't know if that's quite accurate.
Laura, go ahead.
So, we know that vehicles are on the road 24/7, should be replaced about every 2 years. And we are going to be looking at a replacement schedule. So, are you saying your office is probably every 3 to 5 years? Do you put that much mileage on the vehicles?
The vehicles get about 27,000 miles every 3 years. Investigative vehicles.
Well, they're take-home, correct?
They are.
So that would depend greatly on where they live. Somebody that lives right down the road is going to...
Well, somebody like me that lives 2 miles away is obviously going to put on less than somebody who lives like in Rosendale and travels...
Or even another county.
We don't have anybody...
I know, but we do in the county. We do. That is something that can happen.
Could. Yeah, but we don't right now.
Could you purchase a vehicle outright with forfeiture money? Or
Not without going through the executive's office, no. The forfeiture money is in the county coffers, so it's under the control of the finance office. Mm-hmm. When we get forfeiture money in, it goes directly to the finance office, and then it's deposited into either a forfeiture maintenance account or a forfeiture reserve. The reserve backs up the budget. I wish we had as much forfeiture money as people think we have. It's not that it comes and it goes, but whatever we do with the forfeiture money is generally done through the budget process. So, and I know when we have our forfeiture lines in the budget, if they get depleted for some reason, which we haven't depleted them in the last few years, about 5 years ago, we were running a lot of equipment, they were depleted. We'd have to come to the legislature to ask, like any other resolution, to ask for money to be moved from the reserve into the operating account. So it's all done through the legislative and the executive process.
Yeah.
And if we disallowed leases, would it affect your ability to renew regularly?
We've already been disallowed. Oh. The exec doesn't, our deputy exec doesn't like leases.
Thank you.
So we don't have cars.
Why wouldn't we purchase that? So what is the difference? So you're saying if we didn't disallow leases, you would have vehicles that you need, but you don't have vehicles you need?
And what I'm saying is the process of turning it over,
yeah,
changing the mechanism. We had three leases up for renewal this year. All three were denied. Those cars have not been replaced because the fleet has not been able to purchase cars for us. So we have three investigators that are driving.
Are we waiting for models to come in and purchase them?
I have no idea.
I think what we need is the DA's office to come in with a resolution asking for funding.
Amanda,
to replace three
what
vehicles.
Needs to happen? If we, if,
we're
if,
waiting for some information regarding the use, the intended use of the vehicles, so that we can follow our green fleet policy for right sizing.
What information haven't you gotten?
About what the intended use is of each vehicle under, you know, and looking at which make and model would be.
Is this
new? I don't have it. They're investigative vehicles. They're used for investigations, witness transport, arrestee transport, surveillance. It's a full package law enforcement vehicle. And that'll be full package by size, I mean by use.
So, leases. Does this legislative subcommittee, special committee, believe that leases, that we should weigh in on leases in this policy?
I think no, because the interest rates are going to change, and if we lock in this policy, then it might affect the fleet's ability to make the right decision.
I mean, it's cheaper to own a vehicle than it is to lease a vehicle. Now, I know you like the Jeeps or whatever, but you can buy those on OGS commodity list. I mean, you can get a Jeep Liberty or whatever, you know, whatever you need or want. Maybe we should just say that the preferred is to purchase and lease by exception.
Thoughts?
I kind of like Herb's idea that he just stated. That gives us some degree of play and leeway while putting forth a like best practices suggestion.
Amanda, would you say that's our existing policy already?
Yes, and that
procedure.
Several years ago, more than several, but we did an extensive RFP for some municipalities use a leasing model for fleet management, and we did an RFP with vendor interviews, etc., to look at Enterprise as one of the companies that will actually come in and replace the whole entire fleet, go to a lease model, manage all the fleet, etc. When we looked at that, the financials weren't anywhere near being attractive for us to do that because of our existing fleet management procedures, our garage, etc., our ability to manage the vehicles. It was much more cost-effective to own.
Any counties our size have built a model that way? Any?
I don't know who they had a couple.
Orange leases all their vehicles.
Really?
Yep.
They do. It's a lease. It's lease, but you own it. It's a very. And I want to say it can be confusing if you don't know what you're
that's
talking
that's
about.
That's the stuff you're talking about.
It's like a lease, but you own it, and in 5 years they sell it, and that
and
money rolls
get, yes,
into a new purchase.
I know a guy that's doing that right now.
Yeah.
His wife.
It's you'd right. have to sit down, and I'd recommend if you're thinking about it to sit down and actually. Have them
they
review
did.
It,
it sounds
with you
like it was,
before you.
They deemed it.
Yeah.
All right, let's go. Herb, why don't you make a motion for yours, and if we wanted to get a little more specific at some point with the language.
I make a motion that in our policy, it's preferred to purchase vehicles with the option to lease by exception.
And I would second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye. I'm in favor.
here's another quick one, and we have gotten halfway through the list, and we got a couple minutes to go. So, in the Charlie Busick policy, and I probably most policies, I don't, you know what? I wonder if it's in the new one, but Amanda, do you remember in the template that you gave me whether or not it spoke to take-home vehicles for employees that live out of county? Historically, we have substations all over the place. If you had a take-home vehicle and you were not a county resident, you would have to leave the vehicle at a substation of your choice. I would assume it would be the closest one to the border that you're going over to leave county. We now do have four or five people, and I mean, it is some serious mileage they're putting on. Do we want to go back to that policy, which I believe most counties probably would do?
And the state does.
And the state does.
And the thruway does it.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Do we want to? I certainly do. Does anyone have any issues with having that be the once again law of the land with regards to take-home vehicles and out-of-town residents?
Is that for all agencies?
That would be all agencies.
So we have people that do live out of county, but they're on specialty teams, SWAT team, the dive team. So that would delay if they would have to get all their gear in their personal car, bring it to their car, because you can't leave certain equipment in your patrol vehicle. So then they would have to go then respond to their car.
Well, if time is of the essence and someone's drowning, I'm not sure an out-of-town dive vehicle is going to get there in time to help.
Well, it depends.
If it's a search and rescue, if it's a search and you're looking for a gun that may have been thrown over a bridge, I'm pretty sure a minute or two to go to the closest substation wouldn't be the end of the world. But
at the same time, so if we say that our closest substation, so say if somebody lived in Poughkeepsie, they would have to go up to either Sopus or go to Walk Hill. Yeah, that dive emergency could be at the walkway, the Mid-Hudson Bridge, which they would actually have to pass to be able to get their car.
Look, we may end up...
No, this one is...
No, no, it's quite possible that we end up putting in an exception for that. But to be honest with you, on your side of it, I think, and you're talking about life and death, I think people that are doing this for us, who I find to be quite heroic and I appreciate, should probably live in county, because time is of the essence. And if you're going to have a take-home vehicle and you're going to be called to save somebody's life, you probably shouldn't be living in another county if you're doing it for Ulster County.
A lot of the people that live out of the county are just over the county line, though. Yeah. Well, if you have something, let's say in the town of Shandaken, in Pine Hill, the guy who's just in Delaware County is 20 minutes closer than the people that live in Kingston.
Can we? I would recommend maybe, I mean, you drive from here to Marlboro, or almost Newburgh.
That's a big county.
Our county is bigger than Dutchess County in square miles. Maybe put, instead of just saying out of county, maybe put a mileage cap for distance to home. Because how is it fair that somebody can drive to almost Newburgh from point A when somebody might live out of county and just be...
You can always come up with exceptions. Yeah. I'm okay. Personally, I'm okay with the exception. I stand by, you should probably live in the county if you're going to be doing that. But it is what it is, and there are probably occasions where they might even be the quickest one there. What is everyone's thoughts on overall having that requirement, and secondly, a couple of exceptions for law enforcement and emergency response?
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with both.
Me too. I think it might be helpful to see a list of the exceptions so it's not across the board, Sheriff.
Well,
like the dive team is a great example.
Zeke, we'll remind you of that. To get us the list of, it'd probably only be two or three people.
Yeah.
And get us a list of the exceptions that you're looking for.
And I think you probably know
pretty much our exceptions right now. It's just been solely if you're on a specialty team.
Yeah.
Those are the only exceptions. Great.
My point was going to be, don't use the name of this person, but the position.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do think within... I don't think... It's probably going to be rare that somebody would live, like you said, it wouldn't be a bad idea to have a limit beyond...
A mileage of,
yeah,
instead of out of
county. We're not saying two counties away,
And are canine units considered the same, like the dive team? Like the
specialty.
Yeah.
SWAT.
Is that,
anything SWAT where you have a higher probability of being called out.
Yeah.
Okay. Aaron, you want to make a motion and put the right words into it?
So... I guess I'm going to be making a motion to require take-home vehicle owners to reside in county with certain exceptions for law enforcement and specialty teams.
No, they don't have to reside in the county, but they won't be able to take the vehicle out of across county lines home. They'll have to leave it
at a substation.
Yeah, at a substation.
So I'm going to make a motion to require that take-home vehicles be left residents be left at the nearest substation within the county, with certain exceptions for law enforcement and specialty team members.
It'll be seconded. Yes. Without the word "and," it's not law enforcement and specialty teams. It's law enforcement specialty teams.
I think we're going to end up coming up with.
We'll get it from the recording.
Verbiage, anyway. Yeah. But all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Let's get one more in. I don't know if we're going to finish it. And then the bottom is more or less take home, which will be dealt with in the next. We'll finish up the ones we approved at the beginning of next meeting, and then just dive right into the take home aspect. But this, the last thing we'll talk about is the replacement schedule. Minimum number of miles or years old. It was great that Phil kind of described issues he had that would be fixed by a proper replacement schedule. What does the state do?
I don't know. The throughway used to be 75,000 miles or 10 years. I think it was 10 years.
Any thoughts from the executive side or the sheriff?
But now, I mean, typical now, it's over 100,000 miles. And vehicles last longer than they used to. So, except the ones I own.
Rough drive.
So my car is a 2003, and there's not a rust spot in it. I don't know what model you were driving in 2009, but
Those Dodge rusted a little bit quicker than most vehicles I've realized.
I had a Dodson pickup truck. Within 2 years, it was a rust.
All vehicles nowadays they rust a lot sooner than you would think.
That's why I don't buy foreign stuff. It's all
how many miles did that 09 have?
Need the true code on the.
I
want to
say
need to put the true code on the undercarriage.
Yeah. It rusted in the body.
Was that the V6 too?
110. It's right in there. It was not crazy high, but too high for law enforcement.
We could do a 10-year, 100,000, but we should probably look around what the state is doing right now. I mean, these are.
I think it varies by department.
And it varies because by how much they use it.
Yeah, a plow truck's different than a cruiser is different. We don't have to have this in this policy.
Because sometimes they don't use them. They're older. And they have low mileage, too.
Yeah.
So we're not going to get rid of something and it's structurally fine. And it could be, say, a 2011, 2010. Structurally, it's perfect. But it doesn't have enough mileage on it. And we're not really spending a lot of money into it. So we're not going to get rid of something right away like that, either. It depends on the vehicle and how they're using it, too.
How do we fix Bill's problem?
Well, Bill's problem.
It's a unique problem.
All right, we're not going to policy our way. So do we want to leave this out for now?
I just want to ask, how unique is the problem? Is it only Bill's department?
There's three of them.
Yeah, but is it?
It depends. It depends also on the need. How quickly can you replace these two? During the pandemic, it was horrible.
To replace it again.
Maybe we could.
So we wasted all that time trying to get something.
Surrounding counties and the state to get their information and then go from there.
Let's put it off with the idea that it may not end up in the policy, but let's not completely eliminate it like we did a couple of these other things, and let's quickly take a look at DOT and a couple of other counties here or in other states that have decent looking policies and see what they've come up with. And there could be exceptions in there that it would be basically.
And it should be based on the car too. Yeah. Some cars might have high mileage and be in great shape, and then you bring it for service, and Kim's like, "Yeah, the car's still running fine." Like, there's.
We have a 2012 with like.
Plus, we have New York State inspections. We do, and we're not going to let something out if it doesn't pass inspection either.
It just in regards to that discussion, I was just thinking in regards to maybe we don't have to necessarily, if we were going to do some type of replacement policy, that it's not necessarily a flat age cap, but if we were going to do, you know, a certain, you know, nothing over 400,000 miles or something on a vehicle, or I don't know how. I mean, what's the highest mileage on one of our fleet vehicles?
150 we've had.
200,000 miles.
Or? I'm talking about our department, but we've done ours at the discretion of the fleet manager. When she says, "Hey, either the miles are getting too high, or the vehicle's getting in bad shape, or it's going to cost X amount of dollars to fix it, and it's not financially a smart decision," we'll either decommission the vehicle, and we'll look into purchasing a new one for the new year. Sometimes it gets tough, because if three vehicles go down and you only allow the patrol division to purchase five, but there was three that got in an accident that can't be replaced, then they're only really getting two new cars out of it, and you have to decommission two cars instead of the five you were trying to decommission due to high miles. It's almost...
The only way to do that with the mandatory cutoff is you had a fleet sitting there.
Yeah.
And this car hits 150,000, it's considered junk. You go to where you have all these things stockpiled, and you get another one. But if you have to wait 7 months to order a car, you're 7 months without a car.
Well, nobody said you have to decommission before you get the next
vehicle.
No,
but if something, like say there was a vehicle accident and one is irreparable, or you didn't know the year before on the inspection the vehicle was fine, but then they go to roll the inspection out and then the frame's rusted out. Then you're like, oh, now I have to wait until the capital gets approved for the next year, and we're already two cars down because, you know, we planned on replacing five. But then, you know, you lost two to an accident and one to the frame rusting out. That's it, right?
And Murphy Law says that the ones in the accident were the newest,
brand new ones, right? That's what they're going through right now.
So it sounds like to me that, you know, there's not, that we're not going to be able to probably get a uniform, replacement schedule. You know, for each, it sounds like every department is going to be in a different place.
I'd say at the discretion of the fleet commander.
That's exactly what I was going to say too. I think we need to have that caveat.
I mean, she's that person, and she does, yes. You know, like, I don't know how to, you know, work on cars, so I'm going to pay somebody to do it. She's that person for that.
All right. We can still take a look at any policies that are out there real quick.
And with that, I'd like to thank Kim for all of your expertise and professionalism.
Okay.
Yay.
Thank you.
All right. Did we want, real quick, we got to go. So does anyone else have anything they'd like to request from anyone here for next meeting that we didn't talk about? I know we did go through everything we've ever discussed is on this sheet.
Did you talk about job titles?
No.
Next time.
That's
next time.
That's the chunk at the bottom.
Yeah. Oh, so we'll discuss sunset also?
All that.
I like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but is there anything before we adjourn or quickly talk about the date of the next meeting?
Well, I do think it was great that we were able to bang out a few of these things. So.
Yes, thank you, Natalie. That was a good idea.
Yes, Natalie, thank you so much for compiling this.
We're halfway there. October 22nd, does that, if everyone wants to look at their schedule real quick?
Is that the week, that's the week after session?
Yep.
I don't think I have an issue with that.
What was that?
It was just like a...
Okay, got it. I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Second?
All in favor?
Aye.
Second?
Yeah. All in favor?
Sorry, I got confused.
Aye.
And the 22nd works for me.
Yeah, okay. No problems. No problems.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.